This week, it's Three Steps to Heaven and we go international. Welcome to Grassroots Plus, sponsored by Gusto Homes.
Gusto Homes has been innovating in the residential house building sector for over 25 years with a focus on building clean energy homes in sustainable communities. Well, our guest tonight, I think, probably describes himself as a Merthyr lad, Swansea fan living in Spain, and's also had a year or so in Slovakia. It's Matt Harrison. So welcome, Matt. You also run a couple of podcasts, and you very kindly sent the picture in of a picturesque ground that I liked and sort of chose it as my favourite. Good
Yeah.
evening.
Good evening to you. Thank you for having me on the podcast. It's nice to be a guest for a change. Like you said, I host two of them, so it's nice to be on the other side.
I'll tell you now, Matt, he's after a free holiday beans if you've won that competition.
Yeah, having just seen the view out your window you've shown us, yeah. I'll be over tomorrow about 12 if that's all right.
We had a lot of rain last week. Went to watch Malaga on the weekend and got absolutely soaked. So we're back to normality in this part of the world now.
Yeah, so are we. It rains every day. Right, lots more to come from Spain. We're live in Spain. Tell you, we must be getting good. We're going to talk about Shiwadiwadi tonight. Remember them? Leicester's finest in export. Many would say Leicester's only export. But anyway, remember the song? Step six, you find a league to love. Step five, you kiss and hold it tightly. Step four, you go bust. We'll tell you about that one a little bit later, but that seems to be how it's going. All before all that, though, it's David with a little bit of a different last weekend roundup.
It is a different rounder. I'm just gobsmacked you didn't use the lines of a Fisherman's Friend song instead. Anyway, looking at step five, five of the 16 step five champions have already been decided, with Wellingborough, Emly, and Mildenhall joining Sherwood Colliery and Farnham Town in the celebrations. Easter Monday's battle of the top two in the North West Counties League was also a local derby between the two Wythenshawe teams. 1,200 spectators saw Leaders Town open a 4-point gap at the top. It was also first v second in the northeast, with Shildon taking the honours at Bishop Auckland in front of a crowd of 1,100. Locally, Pinchbeck will be playing in step six next season, while Skegness have lost form at the worst possible time of the season. Sleaford are now just 3 points adrift of the final playoff place with two matches left. Joining Pinchbeck in step six land will be Skelmersdale United and Maltby Main.
We should say, in Pinchbeck's defence, mathematically, they are not actually a step six club yet. But as David has already informed me, Oakland will need to lose the last two matches by a combined total of 45 goals. So it just isn't going to happen.
No, I'm sad to see them go down. We've enjoyed our trips there, but they have perhaps been struggling for the last couple of seasons, so I guess it was inevitable, to be honest.
Skelmersdale, a massive big named club. And Maltby Main, which is a grander, I've actually been to, remarkably enough, both getting relegated. No one is actually safe in the league system, are they, David?
No. Maltby, I know, have been struggling this season. But yes, Skem are a big name to be going down, aren't they? They're a team most people, I can see Matt's nodding.
Well,
And
I always remember them. Didn't there wasn't there a ground called Stormy Corner?
I think you could be right, yeah.
Had a really cool name. I'm sure it was something like that. But yeah, I don't think I ever made it there when I lived in the Northwest, actually, but I've definitely seen them play quite a lot.
Yeah, it is a big name to go down.
Right, step six.
Remarkably, we only have four confirmed champions so far: Bourne Town, St Helens, Brockton, and Hartbury University. For our local sides chasing playoff places, there is still much to play for. Harrowby and Newark Town in the UCL will fancy their chances, as will Shirebrook and Retford United in the Northern Counties East League. The race to stay on the football map is just as intriguing, with Renner's fate now seemingly in their own hands, with matches against Aspsby and Selsdon still to come.
Them two and Renner stay up. The feeder leagues.
Nettleham require 12 points from seven matches to secure the Lincolnshire Senior League. Appleby Frodingham have moved to the top five to keep their hopes of pyramid football alive. It's a classic case of points or matches in hand at the top of the Notts Senior League. Stapleford lead Woolerton by 13 points, but have played 5 matches more than their rivals. The two meet each other this weekend. In the Central Midlands Alliance North, Dern lead Doncaster by 10 points, with the latter having 3 matches in hand. While in the South, Pinkston also have a 10-point lead, but South Normanton have 4 matches to make up.
Still a lot of football to play. We learned today, actually, that Dern and District have passed the ground grading, and Doncaster have not applied to join the pyramid. It looks like Dern is an absolute definite to join the pyramid. As David will tell you, I have no favourites. Everybody's equal in my world. Cornish Corner.
Yeah, you can take your tongue firmly out this corner of your cheek there. A single 84th minute goal against Falmouth propelled Lizard Argyle to 4th in the table. Is that 4th out of 8?
No, you know, it's not. It's 4th out of 12. It's 8.
Okay. I mean, in the top quarter then, that's good.
Going for promotion, but running out of games, I'm afraid. But that's not bad for the old lifeboatman. I'll settle for that. Right, this is, of course, Grassroots Plus with Dave Pickerell, with Mick Bradley, and live in sunny Spain, Matt Harrison. It can't be bad, can it? So, question one, this is where we bring Matt into it. He's going to have to work for his living.
Yeah.
How did a boy from the Valleys, I can't do a Welsh accent, so a boy from the Valleys find himself in Spain? I mean, they don't normally get any further south than Cardiff. This one's in Spain.
Well, I've not lived in Wales for a long time now. As I alluded to in the last section, I lived in Manchester for quite a long time. I did my teacher training in Liverpool because I'm a teacher here out in Spain. Basically, it was a relationship with someone who moved to Gibraltar, which didn't last after that. And I'd already agreed to move to Spain, but I thought, well, I'm here now. I may as well give it a go. And that was almost 5 years ago now. So I've been here 5 years. As you said, I live in the center of Marbella. The school I work at, it's sort of written in the stars a little bit. As you guys said at the start, I'm a Swansea City fan. The school I work at is called Swans International. So we do have like a staff football team, which does have a swan on the badge. So I do feel like, you know, that is the closest I think the prospect's gone now. It's the closest I ever would have got to playing for Swansea. So there's that too. And it's been great. Like, I think everywhere I've lived, like when I lived in Manchester, I'd always, you know, I used to do quite a lot of ground hopping, and I'd go to, you know, a lot of non-league football as well as league football. And yeah, that I suppose when I moved here, I thought football will be my way to sort of make something of my time here. And what originally was going to perhaps be more ground hopping, I eventually settled down with one club.
I take it, you say you're a teacher, so I take it you are teaching English?
Yes.
Or Welsh?
Oh, no, I'm an English teacher in an international school, so I teach lots of, like, you know, there's quite a lot of Scandinavian kids, lots of Russians and Eastern Europeans, and lots of Spanish. Not many Brits these days because of the B word, which we've talked about to death, I'm sure. But yeah, not many Brits in our school these days. There is some. I do teach some footballers' kids, actually, but I probably can't name them on this podcast. One of them, very, very high profile. But unfortunately, I can't say on
air. I mean, we hear horror stories in this country about the teaching profession and people wanting to get out of it. And you've left this country. You've gone over to Spain. Do you enjoy teaching?
Yeah, I love it. It is, again, like, I've been here 5 years now. As I think we're going to talk about a bit later, I did spend time working in a school in Slovakia too. And in between these two different experiences, I lived in Horsham for a year with my then partner. I suppose that year back in the UK and going, I worked in a really, really good school in Horsham, actually. And Yeah, but it's tough. It's definitely a lot tougher out there. And obviously, since especially this week, even like reading articles about it, I can't say I'm too buzzing to get back into the education scene back home in the UK. But like, in a classroom, I love it. It's great here. I work for a good school. I've got good kids. Like it's a nice area to live in as well, obviously. So yeah, the actual teaching side of things, I do thoroughly enjoy it. And I teach quite a lot of English literature, so that's quite a fun subject to teach, I think. So yeah, I'm a happy teacher.
So obviously your Shakespeare is very good, but how's your Spanish?
It's getting there. I do have Spanish lessons every week, but it's funny. I always, because like Marbella is quite international. So if you went into a bar in Marbella and started at ordering food in Spanish, they'd usually just reply to you in English. But the time I probably get to practice my Spanish the most is going on away games with Malaga Club de Football. And I'm a bit of an outsider there, and I have to speak Spanish because there's perhaps the people, Malaga fans, they are Spanish, believe it or not.
They are indeed. We're going to talk a lot more about Spanish football. It's not actually in the script, but I've got a couple of questions I'm
Okay.
absolutely desperate to ask him. Anything on that one, Mr. David?
No, I'm sure when we get onto it, I was going to ask you which division Malaga sit in and stuff like that. And I'm intrigued about the grassroots scene in Spain as well, how it compares to ours. But we can obviously cover that up later.
We'll cover. We will cover all that. Absolutely, no doubt. First of all, though, a quick 2 minutes because we supposedly are in the middle of the two legs of the FA Vars, but it didn't quite work out like that.
No, it didn't. It's all to play for as Romford and Lincoln finished all square in Cockneyland. The match was played on what the Lincoln manager described as the worst pitch his team had seen all season. The Essex team had a player sent off in the first half, and they scraped a draw with a last-minute equaliser. They go again at Ashby Avenue on Saturday. Worcester City called off the other semi-final on Friday evening, citing a waterlogged pitch. Ironically, the rearranged match will now take place at the Sixways Stadium after the FA told the club that the fixture must take place this weekend.
I mean, I don't suppose you could knock Worcester that much because the ground wasn't fit and they want home advantage, but they've had to give it up because if they didn't give it up, the FA was going to give them a ground to go and play on because they was absolutely insistent that that match was going to get played this weekend, wherever it was going to get played, which is fair enough. Romford and Lincoln, we both saw Lincoln on Easter Monday, but we didn't see the Lincoln United side that's going to play this weekend. So there's very little that we can say apart from let's just hope the goalkeeper has a better game than he did on Monday, bless him. I don't know if I was Romford, David, and played for over an hour with 10 men and come out of it 2-2, I would be going into that game with a little bit of confidence.
I think so. Reading between the lines from Chris Funnell's interview after the game on Monday, Romford haven't had to play a game on Monday either, by the sounds of it. I think they've got a full week to recuperate. So they will probably be perhaps a little bit more positive on that. I have noticed that the crowds for the last game at Ashby Avenue was significantly bigger than they normally get. And that might work in Lincoln's favour as well. And the other thing we did notice, they didn't have a particularly good afternoon, but the lads that were playing did run themselves into the ground. So I don't think we can question their fitness levels.
No, we can't. So when we do wish Lincoln all the best, it would be fantastic to see a UCL North team playing at Wembley. So we do wish them all the best. Right, back to Matt. Something I've called the Malaga podcast. And this is where I'm just going to leave it to David because this is his sphere.
Yeah, well, obviously, as you alluded to, you run a podcast for Malaga. I assume it's possibly English language. Now, you're playing in the Champions League in 2012, so 12 years ago that was. Now, if I've got this right, you're in the third tier of Spanish football. Huge difference.
Yeah, now, like I said, I've only been here almost 5 years now. So for me, like, obviously, I remember watching those Champions League games in like a pub in Manchester, but I had no affiliation to Malaga whatsoever. I'd never been to Malaga. I hadn't been to the south of Spain. I think I'd only been to Spain once. So it's quite good for me, because since some people have accused me of being a curse here, because pretty much since I've been here, they've been plummeting. They were in the second division when I arrived in 2019, fourth relegation pretty much for 3 years. Then last year they finally did get relegated, and essentially where Malaga play now, it's non-league football essentially. It's the highest level of semi-pro, I guess is what you call it. But it's a bit like being in the National League back home, where obviously the National League back home now, it's not really non-league as such as it is. Plenty of big teams down there. And yeah, Malaga are in the third tier is split into a north-south divide. I think it's fair to say Malaga are the biggest name in the south divide, in the north divide. Amazingly, you've got Deportivo A Coruña as well. So another team which has got a lot of Champions League history, and much more Champions League history than Malaga. But so yeah, they call it El Pozo, which means the well, because once you fall down the well, you don't get out of the well. So it's been fun. Like this year, we've got a huge 30,000 seater stadium, and last year we were getting around 20,000 fans, which is still good. But this year we're selling that stadium out quite a lot, because I don't know, there's been this sort of buzz around the team, even though they've got relegated. There's a lot of local young players playing for the club, because basically the club has no money whatsoever. And they're quite good young players. So there's been excitement there. And yeah, this, unlike a lot of clubs in Spain, in the last year or so, there's a sort of an away fan culture has built up, because obviously Spain is so vast that, and I'm sure people have perhaps watched like La Liga on Sky and things like that. You don't really see many away fans, but we took 5,000 to play Granada's B team the other day. A few weeks ago, we took 3,000 to this little town called Linares a few weeks ago. So it's been really fun on that front. I've been really fortunate that I've been able to go to, I'd say, 75% of these games. So yeah, like, as much as, you know, people, when I tell them I'm a Malaga fan, especially people back home, they go, oh, they were in the Champions League before, weren't they? Where are they now? Yeah, they were in the Champions League before. but I guess what I'm trying to say is it's quite good fun down the well at the moment, actually. We're sitting third in the table. We're likely to be in the playoffs come the end of the season, where we'll play one of the teams from the North Divide. And yeah, it's because despite how bad the football team has been pretty much since I moved here, it's been really good fun.
So potentially then, you could be back into what I, if listening to you correct, the top two divisions is the professional league in Spain. That's the same with a lot of,
yeah,
fans, with a lot of countries, the top two divisions, and then after that you go to amateur or semi-professional or whatever. Are your players full-time?
Yes, but they're, you know, like it's a very long story with the sheikh, who technically owns the club but is not allowed to run the club at the moment. He hasn't been allowed to run the club for years now, but he won't sell the club. So yes, they are full-time, but they're not on loads and loads of money. They're probably more than quite a few teams in this league, to be fair. But yeah, we're not an affluent club. But the thing which is sort of giving us a bit of money is the big stadium we have compared to other teams in the league. And the other thing we've got over the other teams in the league is, like, the name Malaga. It's a big name in Spanish football, so people want to come and play here. Unfortunately, the flip side of that is lots of teams are coming to La Rosaleda, and treating it like their cup final. So we're having some tricky games at home. But yeah, there's the opportunity to get back into that second division. The playoffs are quite a tricky route. I can't remember exactly how they work this time, but it's not straightforward. But we're doing good. I think we're 9 points off the automatic promotion spot because there's only one goes up directly, and it's going to be tough to bridge that gap now we're in April, but we're still having a go at it.
Okay, so the podcast then, is that an independent one where, as you can say pretty much what you want to say,
yeah,
or are you working for the club?
No, so basically it's called the Giri Cast. Giri is the sort of Spanish slang word for foreigners, because Malaga, obviously the Costa del Sol, has quite a lot of expats and Brits living down here. So for about 25, 30 years, maybe even a little bit more, there's been like a group of Brits who live in Benalmádena going down to La Rosaleda, and they call themselves the Giri Army. So if you see photos of La Rosaleda, is quite a strange sight. That behind one of the goals, there's a huge England flag with Giri Army written on it. So we sort of named the podcast, I guess, as a bit of an ode to, you know, us being Giri's the goal there. We started doing it, like a lot of people started projects. We started it during lockdown. Just after lockdown. We planned it over lockdown, and then when football returned, we started it. It's just me and a Dutch, half Dutch, half Spanish guy called Chris started it. He was like born down here. And then, yeah, we've acquired other people along the way. So we've got Alex, who's a Yeovil fan, Luke, who's from Doncaster, but sports Tottenham. And we've got Nick, who's a Blackpool fan. But we've all found this sort of connection through Malaga. And yeah, we've got like people that listen to the podcasts, and we have podcast meetups a couple of times a season with our listeners. And yeah, it's been really good. But yeah, it's independent of the club. We do have some like connection to the club. So we do sort of like we don't work for them, but we do have sort of a bit of an inside track with them. So we do behave ourselves a bit. But yeah, we pretty much say what we want. It goes very random at times. It doesn't always. I think Malaga Club de Football has been so depressing over the last few seasons that we've got to find ways to humour ourselves at times as well.
Quite right, too. Right, I'm just going to take you off script for a moment, because I can get very serious. Every time I seem to turn on my mobile devices these days and go on to Twitter or whatever it's called these days, there's yet another case of racial abuse in football matches. I think there's been three, if not four, this week, culminating in a Wrexham fan being banned from the ground for 3 years, I think, for calling Tranmere fans English bar stewards, which I find a little bit, you know, racist. There's racist abuse and racist abuse, but you want to know what we call the Welsh. But when I think of racist abuse in football, I go straight to Real Madrid and Vinicius Junior. That will not go away, will it, Matt?
No, it's funny. Like, there was the one against Valencia last year, which was a bit of a big story. But then since then, it happens all the time. And it's horrible, really, because then it's sort of used as, oh, but he's winding the crowd up, as if that's like an excuse to do it in the first place. It's like, it's just absolutely not on. I've been very fortunate that in Spain, I've not witnessed anything like this. But obviously, yes, in on the national newspapers and on national TV, it is sort of something that comes up again. But it's definitely a huge problem, because I do feel like he's not getting much sympathy from the press either. And I think he really should be, because I think it's horrible what's happening to him. And, you know, it has happened to other black players in the league or the leagues. But he's become a focal point for it. And he's trying to speak up about it and raise awareness, and sort of I feel like he's being, you know, squashed a bit basically. But yeah, like from my own experience, like with Malaga and going to watch other Spanish football, I've not seen any issues. I'm not saying they aren't there, but yes, it is not going away anytime soon. And I can't see it going away while Vinicius is playing for Real Madrid, basically.
You probably answered my question, my next question, and that was, is it rife in Spanish football? But you've not seen it. It just seems to me that this poor lad is just getting pelters for the fact that he's one of the world's best footballers. And there's no other reason than that. Pure jealousy.
Yeah. And, he is sort of one of those players that'll sort of wind up the fans a bit. But so what? Like, we have them, you know, have them in the UK as well. It doesn't give you an excuse to racially abuse them. Like, you know, fair enough if he's getting a bit of stick or whatever, but it shouldn't be on that, anywhere near that level of, you know, bringing the colour of his skin into it at all.
David, what can a grassroots football club do, if anything? Because like me, you have seen all these reports on Twitter in this last week, and it seems that as it gets to what they call the business end in the football season, and everybody gets more and more hyped up about it, the more and more people just cannot accept when it doesn't go their way, or the fact that somebody is very good but he's not on your side.
Well, part of it's supporter education, isn't it? Ask them to, you know, hopefully other supporters will ask them to calm down. We've seen in one of the instances earlier in the week that the club has reacted very, very quickly. They've identified the offending supporter, and I think they've said they've banned him for life. Is it one of them, the team down in Essex?
Yeah, I think that's the case, yeah.
That was, I think it was, they were playing against New Salamis, and I think, if I got that right, and they've banned, I think, the player for life. You'd like to think that it would be more like rugby union. It will self-police itself, and the clubs will actively, wherever, support the players on both sides, and there is no place for it in the game. And I'm pleased to say, Matt, that your experience has been good, because it's very easy for the press over here to blow it out of proportion when you get an incident in England. Oh, but you want to see it in Spain, you want to see it in Italy or whatever. And it sounds like people are behaving themselves. Oh, I was going to actually ask you, you say your team travel in big numbers. Are you segregated? Do people go to football and quite happily stand all together and sort of, you know, good afternoon and have a beer together, or do they keep you apart?
I will say this year with Malaga, like in regards to in the stadium, it's segregated, but obviously, like I said, we're taking these big followings. So sometimes people do just get tickets in the home end, and I don't think there's been any problems actually. And the positive thing this season has been, like the first game of the season, we played Castellón away, which is the team who are top now. And I went to that game, and it was raining a lot that day at first, and we were in the bars around the ground, and we were drinking with the Castellón fans, and we were having a sing song with them, and they were chanting, you know, Malaga, and we were chanting Castellón, and generally it's been really friendly. A couple of weeks ago I went to Ceuta, which, for those that don't know, is not even on the Spanish mainland. It's in Morocco, in a way.
That's one of the enclaves that makes the reaction to Gibraltar so funny, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So it's sort of like, it's across the water. It's like, yeah, Spanish enclave. And both teams are in our league, actually. I couldn't go to the Melilla game. But in Ceuta, they were absolutely like the local press came out, because we took about 1,000 fans over on the boat. And the local press were like, look at this club. Like, look how good their fans are. And it was really quite celebrated. And we're playing Ceuta at home this weekend, so much, and I've invited some Ceuta fans I made friends with, like, to come have a drink with us this time. And a couple of weeks ago in Alcoyano, we were beating them 3-0, so someone said, they've been really good to us today, haven't they, let's just all sing Alcoyano ole, Alcoyano ole. And so it's been positive in that sense. I'd say a couple of weeks ago, I went to another game in a small town called San Lucar, and the police were a little bit heavy-handed with us then. That I'd say that's more of an issue. It's the police seem to be the ones that want to cause a bit of a problem. They, you know, yeah, not saying we, you know, our fans behave perfectly all the time, and we do have like a, you know, an ultras section, but you know, that just because of ultras, I'm not saying they're misbehaving, but they do get targeted a bit by the police. And yeah, there's been a couple of occasions where the police are a bit full on, but otherwise with away fans, none that I can really think of. And even at La Rosaleda, like, we get quite, you know, lots of fans from, especially some of the smaller clubs, want to see their team play in this big stadium in front of a big fan base, and they're generally welcomed. So, which has been one of the fun things this season, particularly this season. I don't think it's been a problem, even when we're in the Segunda division, but it's been noticeable, like, how friendly everyone is with each other in this tier.
You see, Mr. Pickerel has some very annoying habits when it goes to football matches. One of them is clapping the opposition off, which I can never, never, ever accept. But he does have one saying, and the one saying that if everybody worked to it, it would be a lot better. It's what you do. Never let the football spoil a good day out. Go and enjoy your day out at the football, but don't get pulled into it, because you ain't going to change it, and it's just going to make trouble at the end of the day. And I know that's easier said than done. I really do know that's easier said than done. But that's the philosophy. Follow Mr. Pickerel's example. Right. You are... that's not clapping the opposition, by the way. You are...
he does... He Saturday or Monday afternoon, we all clapped them in, and there was just Mick in the middle, like a flipping statue, just glaring at them as they come off the pitch.
I don't think we really clap them off the pitch. We sort of we'd celebrate the fandom of the other clubs rather than... I don't think I've ever clapped an opposition team either, if I'm being honest.
Good lad. You see?
Oh dear.
Took
me.
Took a boy from the valleys to show you how to show you how it's done. Right, you are listening to Grassroots Plus, proudly sponsored by Gusto Homes. And I wasn't glaring at Lincoln United, I was laughing at the fact they got beat 4-0. Well, I don't know where I was now. Anyway, start of April means it's the start of our annual awards season. It's the first time we've done it, but it's going to be annual. And we require your nominations, please, for the best food served at a non-league football ground. We need you to tell us about it, and if possible, we also need a photo. Now, my esteemed colleague, Mr. Pickerel, is an expert on all this, because whatever ground he goes to, and I turned around, he's eating.
Yeah, what's the word? Nominations so far from me will be sausage roll, will be Collingham. The in the bar, the sausage roll there.
Is that a cardboard one or a sausage one?
The sausage one.
Okay.
Kimberley Miners Welfare will be the steak pie. Hina Town will be the Worthington's draft beer. And I'm just trying to think of somewhere else where we had, a couple of seasons ago at Melton, the samosas were really good as well. And so there's plenty. So yes, your nominations, please, and wherever possible, a picture would be really, really grand.
Can I give my nomination now?
Yeah, you have to send a picture in, though.
yeah, I'll do it. Well, I don't know if I've got... No, I must have a picture of it. It's my hometown, Merthyr. Merthyr Tydfil have the amazing cob and chips with curry sauce over it. Like, on my Twitter, I see it all the time, because it's... I think people go to Merthyr especially for this delicacy, which I've never seen at any other football ground. It's become quite famous at Merthyr, and it is as good as it looks in the photos.
So it is an ordinary cob that they've opened up. It's not, because I went somewhere and they got like a little like a small loaf, and they'd actually hollowed it out and they put the chips in and poured it in.
Well, I didn't realize, because obviously being a... you know, living in the valleys, and you don't really leave the valleys until, well, you know, I fled them now, but...
That's you and Tom Jones.
that's what we used to have when we used to go for lunch in school, we were allowed to go up the local village, and that's what everyone used to buy. You used to buy cob, pull the bread out, and then if you had a bit more money, you'd put curry and chips in. And if you didn't have as much money, you'd just put crisps in there. But it was only when I left Merthyr and went to university, I discovered, like, oh, not everyone does this.
Yeah, I should say, actually, anybody that hasn't been, Penydarren Park is definitely worth a visit. It's a nice ground. It's traditional. And the supporters there are out of this world. For a while, when I was ground hopping in the sort of towards the west of the country, I would pick Merthyr away games because of the crack from the travelling Merthyr fans as well. They were such a great bunch to bump into.
Yeah, I actually went to watch them Christmas time because my brother now lives in Southampton. He works for Southampton University, and he's been, like, lots of Merthyr's league of down in that sort of southwest area. So we did go to watch Sholing v Merthyr. So it was quite nice to be back amongst my people.
I do hope they beat Sholing, did they?
Yes.
You started it now. If anybody wants to go and make themselves a cup of coffee or something while David rants on about the fact that he doesn't like Sholing FC, now's the time to do it.
I'm not. I just like to beat Sholing. I've got no problem with him. Now, if Sheridan was on here, he would take it to a totally new dimension of his dislike of that club. But no, I remember a few seasons ago in the Southern League, Merthyr coming down to Bashley, and there was still about a bigger majority, you know, there was a bigger number of Merthyr fans travelled than most of the clubs that would come down. You know, there'd be 50 or 60.
I think actually a couple of days after I'd been to Sholing, I met up with Sheridan in Southampton, and I think he did tell me his thoughts on Sholing then.
Oh, good. Yes, he's quite forthright.
You see, and I reckon I go on about the lizard all the time. But
actually, while we're on it, have you got a lifeboat station in?
There we go. There
in Malaga now. I know it won't be RNLI, but Mick likes to visit lifeboat stations. So if you have, he'll be down there at the weekend as well to visit.
I will let you know. I'm not sure. I think in Malaga maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Cool. Excellent.
And I thought you'd prime your guests better than that, Mr. Pickerel. Right. Anyway, David will put that on social media at the weekend, and he alone will pick the winner.
I suppose. Oh, thank you.
I suppose it's where he wants to go on holiday. That seems to be the normal sort of case.
Well, Malaga's sounding fairly good at the moment.
It is actually. Yeah, I think probably Mr. Harrison is probably the favourite to win this. anyway, David will pick the winner, and next week we've got another question for you for our awards season. Right, Grand Hopping, because he used to be a bit of a Grand Hopper. We'll talk about his Grand Hopping in and around the Welsh Valleys and Manchester and Liverpool and places like that. But we're going abroad first, David, and it's not Spain. It's...
Yes, Slovakia. You obviously mentioned you'd lived there for a while. That's got to be quite interesting, because I would have thought it's a relatively young country as well, isn't it? Given what's gone on there over the years. Was ground hopping interesting, or is it pretty mundane and not too clever?
No, I loved it. It was brilliant. To be honest with you, it sort of come from, you were talking about racism in football earlier, that I lived about 5 minutes down the road from Spartak Trnava, which is the probably the biggest club in the league. It's where the National Football Stadium as well. I got to see Sam Allardyce's only game as England manager there. I was at that game, lucky me. But yeah, Spartak Trnava, we'll just say their fans are quite problematic, a large number of them. So I thought, well, I can't follow this club. So that sort of prompted me to do a bit more ground hopping. But yeah, the thing for me was, on a Friday, I'd finish work and then I'd get up, I don't know, whatever the fixture list is, and I could just go, right, where shall I go tomorrow? Shall I go to Prague? Shall I go to Budapest? Shall I go to Vienna? And then alongside that, you were like Slovakia was this beautiful country, and it was really easy to travel. The trains are really good there. Ridiculously cheap. But yeah, ground up was great. Like, you've got to like concrete bowls, because there's a lot of big open concrete bowls. But yeah, it was quite cool for me, because there wasn't really other people doing it. So it was quite sort of unique and special for me. It'd be every now and then you'd catch the eye of someone and you'd be like, ah, oh, that guy's a German groundhopper. You'd find some German groundhoppers every now and then. But yeah, like the football was just terrible. But it was some beautiful places. And again, it was quite fun again for me because people would go, what's this guy doing? And then they speak to you and they're like, well, why is the Welsh guy here? Why is he in our little village watching football? And you try to explain to them and they'd be like, what? And even like my colleagues in the school I worked in were like, what are you going there for? And they just didn't get it. But yeah, I was there for 2 years and I had a great time. I think I did count one day in Slovakia. I think I've done about 55 grounds or something like that. I've definitely got over 50, I remember. So yeah, definitely I'd recommend to anyone go to Slovakia. There's the kickoff times are quite staggered. So you could probably see a few games in a weekend, you know, especially if you're around somewhere like Bratislava, where obviously there's a bigger influx of clubs. Yeah, even like in the top flight, there's some interesting stadiums. I say that there's been a lot of renovation of grounds in the top flight. So some of them are a bit like identikit stadiums now. But yeah, I loved it.
Is it Slovakia that's got the famous ground that's got the sort of steam railway that runs between the stand and the pitch?
I knew you were going to ask me about this and I never made it. Part of the reason I never made it is because I just found it too much pressure. Because people used to ask me, when you go in? And I was like, I can't go there and then not be a train. It would just break my heart. And then it was only like, and the train only run like occasionally in the summer. But I kept saying, you know, I'll do it next time. But I never did. So it's sort of my excuse to go back one day and tick off. I forgot what it's called, Tatran. Oh, I'm not going to remember the name now. But yes, that is Slovakia. And that's the one because, you know, people here, guy does ground hopping in Slovakia. Of course I would have been there, but actually I haven't. It didn't help though that it was over the other side of the country to me and wasn't the easiest little place to get to.
It's one I'd like to see.
Yeah. No, me too. I definitely need to go back and do it.
And we've all seen the social media of the train coming in front of the stand, haven't we?
That was it. I just thought I'd be slated or made fun on if I, and especially because I was writing our blog at the time, Lost Boyos, which essentially was a ground hopping blog. I thought I can't go there and write a blog saying, and I didn't see the train. I didn't get it.
No, you are right. You would be absolutely.
So it's just the pressure got to me and I couldn't do it.
So is that the top of the ground hopping bucket list for you then?
Oh, that's a good question. Probably not really, but in Slovakia it would be. That's boringly, and I think it's very cliched. I my bucket list really would just be anything in Buenos Aires at the moment. I'd love to go to Argentina and watch football there. I guess if I had to pick one, it'd be Boca, but any of them really. I'd like to do the San Siro just because there's always under threat that it's going to go. So that's just iconic. But yeah, I don't really have a bucket list now I think about it. You've put me on the spot there. I'm gonna have to think up a bucket list.
You definitely are, because globe trotting doesn't seem to be a problem for you. Okay, back with Matt in a couple of minutes. But I said at the start of the show about step four and bust. Well, it's not quite the case, but this little next section hopefully will try and explain to you the massive jump between step five and step four in every way. David's got a story to tell you.
Which Wanderers won promotion to step four of the football pyramid last season, but now they face a battle to stay at that level, both on and off the pitch. As the team battles to stave off relegation, the backroom staff are also faced with a deadline of the 31st of March to ensure that its stadium and facilities are up to the expected standard. Stephen Boyle is the chairman of the Isthmian North side and has a long, long list of jobs to do. From installing turnstiles to adding new toilets, Mr. Boyle says that the task facing the club is harder than winning a league title. Wanderers currently play at step four of the football pyramid, and they did back that up with back-to-back promotions. Mr. Boyle says, it's been challenging. If there were other clubs at step five face promotion, I'd honestly question, do you really want it? Upgrade requirements include another turnstile, additional spectator toilets, a further 40 seats, and an extension on the away changing room. Mr. Boyle went on to say, without the help of volunteers, sponsors, local people and parents, the work required would be well into six figures. With the grant money, they've only received about 7% of the costs covered so far. The chairman says that the cost of the required upgrade has impacted on the investment in the squad. It's like going from the Championship to the Premier League. You've got to triple the playing expenses to compete, he says. It's the same at this level. We have gone 50% the other way. We just don't have the money. You're left with a choice, either accept relegation, put your money into the ground grading, but accept you'll go down, but you will be ready next time you go up. Or you gamble, you try to compete, and that has been really tough. Step four is really difficult because you're stuck in between glorified local football with floodlights at step five to step three, which is a sniff away from full-time football.
Now, I'll stop you there, David, because that was the script was obviously written a few days ago. We did hear yesterday. Carry on, David.
Yes, all has ended well with the club announcing that they have scrapped off the line, that they've been awarded the grading that's required. So that's one battle is out. Is out the way for them.
But I thought I'd put the whole story in from the Ipswich Wanderers chairman, because it's not just Ipswich Wanderers, it's numerous clubs that are facing that problem. And I was talking to the guys at Lincoln United on Monday, that the supporters, you know, do you want to go back up to step four or do you want to stay in step five? And surprisingly, the answer, well, probably unsurprising, the answer was you always want to play at the highest level you can get. But probably more surprisingly, that was followed up by, but Lincoln United as a club cannot really afford step four football. The first thing that happens when you go to step four is you've got to find upwards of £12,000 just for coach fees to get you to the North East and back every 2 or 3 weeks. Then it's the players. Half the Lincoln United squad, they say, would probably not want to play in step four football because it's taking them away from their work and or their families for too long a period of time. And this is what I keep trying to say to people. Think long and hard before you make that push to step four. It is a massive, massive difference, David.
Yes. We've always said when you go sort of from step six to step five, the players seem about an inch taller and an inch faster to every ball. But when you go from five to four, they're about a foot bigger and they're a foot faster to every ball as well. And that's before you look at everything else. Your ground's got to be enclosed. The expectation is that your players are going to earn more money. And as you say, I can get Tuesday night off if I'm playing at, say, step five to go 60 miles to the furthest away game. 60 miles in the league Lincoln United are going into is probably short of if they go to somewhere like Long Eaton or Grantham, everything else they're going to is going to be 100 miles to 150 miles away on a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night. So it's a huge, huge gap. I think you're nodding, Matt. I think you've had experience of this probably watching Merthyr over the years.
Yeah, it is a big job. I was actually like just thinking with one of the clubs you're going to mention in the next section, Avoton Colliery's, and perhaps following their rise and seeing how they coped with that jump really well, actually. But like you said, it's very, very tough. That is the sort of the big jump in non-league football, isn't it?
How do they do it in Spain, Matt? And the question really is, obviously, you know, in England, as you the higher up you go through that pyramid, the FA are not in the slightest bit concerned that your football pitch might be an absolute bog and you can't play more than four matches on it a year if it rains. But they are concerned the fact you haven't got two turnstiles, 48 toilets, a burger bar, changing rooms the size of Wembley and all things like that. Is it the same in Spain, or does it come into it when you hit the professional standard that you have to have certain levels?
It's a good question. I hadn't really thought about it before. No. But yeah, my like the grounds are pretty good here in general, but like I'm thinking of some of the like places I've been this year. Yeah, some of them they've had to put up you know, extra, what do you call it, extra like scaffolding for standing and things like that. But yeah, I don't hear it mentioned as much, I'll be honest with you. I don't hear the sort of, I know, the sort of jobs worthness of it all, I guess. And to be fair, the grounds are, they might not be, well, the grounds are pretty good here in general, actually. There's lower down the league, there's a lot of sort of, you know, plastic pitch, one stand, you know, sort of like they're almost like municipal sort of places where the football club rents. So in like the real lower leagues, it's not as much of an issue. But yeah, like I've been, well, where I live now, though, actually is perhaps the best example, Marbella. They have this huge like sort of stadium in the middle of the town. It's absolutely spectacular. I was lucky to go there 2 or 3 times. But that's been condemned for 3 years. That's the only one I can think of, because it's basically because it's on a hill. And I think one of the stands was starting to fall down the hill, and they didn't have enough money to rescue it. So they're playing on some training pitch on the outskirts of town now, which sort of affected them really, because they were generating quite a positive vibe when I first moved here.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. And as you said, Hamilton Colliery, but we're going to come back to the UK now, because you've, for some reason, supported Hamilton Colliery, which I'm sure you're going to explain to us. And your other team was Salford City, and that was before it was ruined.
Yeah. Yes. When they were playing in Tangerine in front of about 180 people, I guess.
180 would be quite generous, I think, to be honest. Yeah, basically, Salford City is easy. It was just my local team. I used to live opposite the Cliff, you know, Manchester United's famous old training ground, which is about 10 minutes walk from Moor Lane. And they sort of link up, the reason I support Hamilton Colliery in a way, because when I moved to Manchester, I'll be honest with you, I didn't really know much about non-league. I knew about Merthyr, but I didn't really go to watch Merthyr that much, to be honest with you. And yeah, there's a guy, Joseph Gibbons. He was doing a blog called Gibbo's 92, which was a ground hopping blog. And he was doing a lot of ground hopping around the Northwest. And I thought, actually, like these non-league grounds look quite interesting. I'll try and go to like one. And, you know, I discovered Salford City was my local one. So yeah, I used to, usually I'd go there on a Tuesday night when I wasn't really doing anything else. So I used to go quite a lot. In an alternate reality, I always think, because they wanted me to write the program for them. And I said, no chance, or be in charge of the program. And I said, no chance, I just don't have time being a teacher and I don't think I could do it. So I do sometimes think I could be working for Gary Neville now in an alternate reality. But yeah, I was actually at the game where they turned up. Because it was a Saturday and I'd had to do some sort of revision session in school on a Saturday. So I thought, well, I'm not going to go far now. I may as well just go to Salford. And I was in the bar and I was like, sure, that's Nicky Butt. And I was like, oh, it is. So I had a photo of Nicky Butt. And then I was walking around the ground. And I said to my mate, sure, I just saw Gary Neville. And then it was. And then obviously Ryan Giggs, we were like, what's going on here? And then obviously that week they bought it. So I did enjoy going to watch them. But basically, Gibbo, who I've just mentioned, he is a native of Averton. So because we were both doing ground hopping, we'd sometimes meet up. And we began meeting up a lot more. And he's, you know, to this day, one of my best mates. So I used to go on Averton Colliery's away days with him. The club secretary, Emil, has come out to visit me and watch a Malaga game. I loved Averton Colliery. I loved the little town of Averton. The ground is great, all the street. They just looked after me really well. And I know I've got a lot of friends who have like visited Averton over the years, and especially Averton Colliery, and they all have the same feedback. It's just a really great local club, really friendly, fun. They're very fun people. And actually Gibbo's visited me next week. He's coming back over. It'll be his second time over this year. So, yeah, like that came through Gibbo, basically. And And he's the one that's perhaps started getting me into non-league proper in the first place.
With Atherton, obviously the colliery is probably was the works team or the social club team. Is it the same Atherton where Laburnum Rovers play as well? So how does that name come about?
I've asked this before. I even it's called the Flat Cap Derby, actually. I was honoured that when they came up with this name, finally they were giving flat caps to like the man of the match, and Emil asked me to present the first ever flat cap in a flat cap derby.
Brilliant!
But something to do with flowers. But they're really close. They're really close. Essentially, because I think I've made fun of him before. Like Gibbo, my mate, he lives round the corner from LR, as they call them. And I even went to see Atherton Collieries get promoted away at Atherton Laburnum Rovers in the most triumphant flat cap derby. But it's a fun typical Lancashire town.
Brilliant! What grassroots is really about?
Do I need to go into a song about matchstick men and matchstick cats and dogs?
Yeah, you could actually, I guess.
Well, it links to Salford as well.
Yes,
it does actually. You see, I thought I'd just bring a bit of, you know, literature or whatever the word is.
You can tell Mick was born well before us, Matt. In fact, he's got all these 70s references, music references.
That's fine by me.
Well before us, Matt's about half Mr. Pickerill's age.
That is very true. So and I'm about half your age. So
he's not trying that one. And he claims he's half my age. For the ones of you that doesn't know either of us, if you actually met us, I'm the one with aqua blonde hair. Mr. Pickerill's the one with cockney grey hair. Right.
I've put grey highlights in mine.
You need a big tub. Well, probably don't actually, because the middle bit misses out.
I know.
I'd just be happy to have some hair these days. I'm wearing a hat for a reason.
don't you get sunburnt. Right. Right. Here's Dave now with the latest as we build up to the annual guessing game, which, you know, I can't wait for June. But until then, we've got to try and outguess the FA.
Yes, these are the clubs that are hoping to get the dream of going into the pyramid. As usual, most of the talk centres around the North West Counties League. Stretching from Cumbria to Staffordshire and taking in both Manchester and Liverpool, it's totally overstretched. The trouble is, the clubs don't want to leave it for either the Midland or the Northern Leagues. Last season, Congleton, Winsford and Northwich Victoria shipped out, with the latter two now experiencing their worst league positions in the club's histories. On the other side of the country, it's the same for saw Bridgwith moved out of the Essex Senior League against their wishes. They now sit rock bottom of the Spartan South Midlands League. There will be a bit more about them to come a little bit later.
And this is the problem that the FA's got, isn't it? It's as they try and get everybody in leagues of 20 in step five football to start with, it's inevitable that clubs are going to have to be leaving leagues that they've been traditionally with for 20, 30, 40 years. And suddenly they find themselves in completely uncharted territory. Winsford fought back and said, no, we're not going. So the FA says, well, in that case, then you're going down to step six, and they've lost all the players and everything. And they're next bottom or bottom of a step six division now. Congleton, who knew what was coming, I think, and said, well, if that's going to happen, we need to move out the players that we have from Manchester-based players to basically SoCon Trent-based players, and it's working wonders for them. They're top of the table. But I think Congleton are probably the exception rather than the rule. And it's going to happen to even more clubs again this summer as the ones on the boundaries find themselves in leagues that they don't want to be in, going to places where they don't want to go. But that's the joy of having a pyramid, I suppose. Right, the biggest and arguably the best ground hop traditionally takes place over Easter, and it's in the southwest, and it happened just about.
Yes, this year it should have all kicked off on Thursday evening with Honiton hosting Sidmouth. but the match referee called it off 30 minutes before kickoff, much to the disdain of the clubs and the supporters alike. The Sun finally made an appearance the following day, and the six matches over Friday and Saturday all got played, with 2,986 spectators attending, which made an average of 497.6 at each game. The top crowd went to Bude, and there was 906 there. So, yeah, it was really good by all accounts. There was a lot of outrage on Twitter on Thursday night about the loss of the game for Honiton and Sidmouth, and you can understand why, I guess. But what does the referee do?
That's a question I ask on most Saturdays. What does a referee do? But that's another story entirely. But I ask it politely. Right. Staying on the subject of Groundhops.
Northwest Counties League club Squires Gate FC was hit with financial hardship after the rain forced their Northwest Counties Groundhop game to be postponed. The Blackpool-based side were due to play at home and were expecting the crowds to filter into their stadium with all the preparations in place. Volunteers at the club estimate that they would have made around £5,000 from the game, but rather they lost £1,000 from purchasing the pies, programmes and other matchday essentials. Instead, 200 pies were donated to a local food bank and hundreds of programmes were left unsold. For a small community-based team, the financial loss is huge, particularly as volunteers have worked hard all over the years to keep Squires Gate FC running.
A lot of these clubs are running on a knife edge, and, you know, they can't afford to lose £1,000. The great thing about going back to the Honiton match that was called off, all the ground hoppers that had prepaid for it basically said, no, you keep the money, you tried your best. And all the other clubs involved in it have decreed that Honiton and Sidmouth will be part of the payout at the end of it as well. So hopefully they won't lose that. And actually, the man that organised that ground up, as well as being secretary of the South Western Peninsula League, is next week's guest. So I'm preempting you there, David, but I think he'll have an awful lot to say about ground ups and the weather. But what we're going to talk about now, or more to the point, what Matt's going to talk about now, because I've just changed this, I've just tweaked this one a little bit. Okay. Your most memorable footballing day out, not the match necessarily, the day out.
Yeah, I was just thinking about this. I just spotted it about half an hour ago. So I've been thinking since. And I guess I'll just throw in a couple of candidates.
Just before you do, then, is this a classic case of a teacher not doing his own work?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, leaving it at the last minute.
Let's try harder.
Yeah, but it's my Easter holiday at the moment. So I'll let myself off. I guess the obvious one that jumped out at me straight away was going to watch Swansea play in Malmo, just because it was our first game in Europe for many, many years, and we'd won the first leg 4-0, but so the game out in Malmo didn't really matter. It was 0-0. I don't think any Swansea fan that day could tell you anything about the game, because there was a lot of drinking in a square in Malmo, but that was really good. But I suppose not memorable, because I got chucked off a train at the end, because I told all of our friends, because we were staying in Copenhagen, I said, everybody get a ticket. And they said, oh, they don't really check them. I said, no, you know, we're in a foreign country, let's not cause any trouble. And then I was the one that lost my match ticket, upside my train ticket on the way back to Copenhagen. So I got chucked off the train in some remote village by the border. I made it back somehow. Then I was thinking a year ago yesterday, I went to watch Malaga play away at FC Andorra. And like just the experience of going to watch football in Andorra again, Malaga lost, so not a great one on the pitch, but just exploring a completely different country. And then I went to Barcelona the next couple of days. Then I went to a place called Tarragona. And then by the time I'd made my way down to near Valencia, Malaga were away at Villarreal, Villarreal B, which we took 1,000 fans to. So that week was good just for the traveling. Me and Gibbo went to the Bruges derby. That was another good one because we were just drinking in the square in Bruges.
That's a surprise.
Yeah. And we got talking to some fans and they explained what we were doing. And they were like, well, do you want to come on the march with us to the ground? And they gave us like these huge flags and we were part of this sort of Club Bruges supporters. It's basically like a show of power against Cercle Bruges to show, look how many fans we got, we're bigger than you. And me and Gibbo were amongst it with waving flags. And yeah, that was good. That was a really fun day. But I think the most memorable is the one, I think I told this story on another podcast, and it's perhaps it's back to Slovakia, and it's back to Spartak Trnava, when I said their fans could be quite problematic. I was still trying things out with them, and they were playing, Trnava were playing 4 hours east in a place called Prešov, which, you know, small town. But I was trying to do every single ground in the Slovak top flight. So I thought, oh, this is my opportunity to do that. And the train left 8 o'clock in the morning. It was about 5 or 6 hours on the train. Trains in Slovakia have bars on them, so they can be quite interesting. But about 10 o'clock, I thought, right, I'll go and have a coffee in the bar, and then I'll switch to, I might have a beer. And when I got there, like the Naughty Boy Ultras were there, like, and you know, these are proper, you know, like look like UFC fighters or skinheads. And they were like terrorizing people in the carriage. And they said something to me and I sort of just shrugged my shoulders and said, I don't know. I don't speak Slovak, sorry. Unfortunately, one of them spoke English. So came over and like, what are you doing here? And I said, I'm going to watch Spartak with you lot. And then I got my scarf out of the bag. And they're like, oh, no, he is. So they all basically sat around me. They said, get this guy a whiskey, 10 o'clock in the morning. So I thought, I've got to play along with this a bit now. And anyway, after about half an hour with them, they all sort of looked and nodded. And they said, we just want to let you know, you will not be harmed today. I was like, okay, thanks for that. They said, but you've got to come and meet Eric. I said, okay. So I got like led down this, you know, really long train to this carriage. And this one carriage is just lined with skinheads, all, you know, some of them with, you know, like swastikas on them and stuff. I thought, oh my God. And they took me in this little carriage and there's a guy there, must have been in his 20s, but again, UFC fighter build, a bit shorter than me, but skinhead. And he was like, so what are you doing here? And I explained again. And he was like, okay, you will not be harmed today. I was like, "Ooh, okay, great." I thought as soon as I get off this train, I need to swerve these guys. So I said, oh, I'm going to my hotel. Anyway, but the first bar I went in after my hotel, they're all in there. And I was like, oh, my God. And they're having a meeting. And I said to the guy who could speak English, what's this about? They said, oh, it's about you. I was like, why? They think you're an undercover policeman. I was like, what? So, yeah, and they weren't very happy about me being there. And they were like, no, we want proof you're a teacher. So I've got the school website up and everything. And they still didn't believe me. And then during the game, this Eric guy looked over at me and was chanting basically F the police towards me. And yeah, basically it was quite scary. But about 2 weeks later, I saw like the same lads and one of them came over and was like, we understand now, you are not undercover police. You will not be harmed today. So I kept almost getting harmed by Spartak Trnava's ultras, but somehow just about evading them. But yeah, that's, I can still vividly remember that train journey. So I couldn't tell you anything about the game. So that's probably my most memorable footballing day out, dodging the ultras of Spartak Trnava. And I was by myself as well. So there was like, I was very much out there on my own.
It's the first time I've done the most memorable day out, David. I think that's going to take an awful lot of beating.
I think so. I think you might have set the bar so high in the first round that
yeah, I think I've probably made a mistake there, but that is an absolutely cracking story. And next week we'll hear about Mr. Pickerel's encounters at Bashley.
The away day to Merthyr.
There is going to be, I know as soon as we stop recording, I'm going to remember a better, I know there's a better one in there somewhere, but that story came to mind first, so I'll stick with that.
Cool. No, it sounds pretty good.
If there's a better one than that, it's going to be one hell of a story. And we'll have you back on just for that, because that is going to take some beating. Right. I just want to talk to Matt at the end of the show about Real Madrid and that other club in Spain. But before all that, it's news time. Totally locally with Mr. Pickering.
Wisbeach Town have apparently applied for either the Eastern Counties League or the United Counties League South for next season. If accepted by the FA, that would make four sides moving away from the North Division. So who are the six to replace them? Two from Step 6, certainly. Grantham Town from Step 4 looks increasingly likely, and then it's anybody else's guess. Newark and Sherwood United have yet to announce their new home. Pitch-wise, they'll be looking for a massive upgrade from the minimum size pitch at Station Road. It's the fourth season on the road for the Highwaymen, but they will still have a long way to go to catch Aylesbury United, who continue to share at Chesham United for the 2024-25 season as they enter their 18th year outside their town.
I suppose this team's even worse than Aylesbury, but this is where you come into your own, David. I mean, is there? Do you know any
that have played in a ground share like that? No, there probably will be an obvious one that I've overlooked. There might be a couple in Scotland, and you could argue some clubs have played a long way from their spiritual home for a long while. I can't think any, Matt, can you?
No, not off the top of my head. I was gonna do my bit of Aylesbury United trivia, which
go
I'm
on then.
And I can't even get the trivia right now. Didn't England play them before?
They did.
90.
Yes. And isn't it the home of, is it the famous Cliff Hercules as well?
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. They did. They played England in a pre-World Cup or pre-European Championship game. That's right.
Oh, I know that.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, you are spot on that one. I can't remember which season it was, though.
All I know is they like ducks. Right, and you see, I keep getting lost because of all this trivia that keeps coming out from YouTube. Right, let's go around the country.
Spartan South Midlands fifth place club St Pantmellion have resigned from the league with 8 matches to play, apparently simply running out of money. That brings us back to Saw Bridgeworth, who will now be reprieved to face another season in a league they are desperate to get out of, unless they're prepared to take voluntary relegation. In a bad week for the Greek Cypriot football Step 4 side New Salamis, they're folding at the end of the season. Under FA rules, they will be placed bottom of the table, reprieving Stowmarket. The East Anglian side are winless this season and have already stated that Step 4 is unsustainable for them. Another mess to sort out. The future of Eastern County's Step 6 side, Norwich CBS, is in doubt after having their ground shared agreement terminated. The ground is the state-of-the-art facility owned by the Norfolk FA, who seem to have reached an agreement with the University of East Anglia to use the facilities instead. If I'm right, New Salamis used to be a Sunday league side, weren't they? And they did very well in the FA Sunday Cup. Yeah. And they decided, well, let's do men's football at Step on a Saturday instead.
Yeah, they've gone right through to Step 4. But going back to Ipswich and many other clubs, it's one step too many.
Yeah, or if you're into the 80s music, Mick, you'd have said one step beyond. But
because music died in the late 70s.
Oh, dear me.
Where are we now? Below the pyramid. Have we done that one? No, we haven't. Shall we do it?
No.
Yes, let's do it.
British Airways Football Club sits second in the combined counties Division 1, but there are strong rumours flying about, so Mick's written this, around that the airline is about to withdraw its funding. They've already informed their landlords, Bedfont, that they will not be there next season. And into April, and clubs are still folding, Oswald Thistle St Mary's from the East Lancs League being the latest to shut its doors.
So far, I've worked at, and I may be wrong, but 10 clubs seem to me to have passed all the criteria to join the pyramid, i.e. the ground grading has been announced at the past and they'll finish in the top 5. It's actually 11 with the news in the last couple of hours at Durning District look like they're going to be okay. But the 10 that we've got, I thought I'd get Mr. Pickerill to read them out. I also thought I'd get Mr. Pickerill to tell you from what part of the country they came from.
Avonmouth I've been to, that's near Bristol. Bressy, I haven't. I think that's Essex. Thornton Cleverleys, I've been to. That's near Blackpool. Club Thorns, obviously, sort of across from Doncaster towards Goole. Alexton and New Park is Leicester, but I haven't been there. Middleton is the club I think we were talking about in Leeds that play at the South Leeds Stadium. I've been to the stadium, but not seen them play. Goulston Reserves. That's just south of the, I think it's the River Waveney at Great Yarmouth. I've been there. Alnwick Town, obviously, on the northeast. And Storrington Community, I haven't been to, but I suspect that's going to be a Devon or Dorset club. The name suggests.
You really was doing so well. And the last one's Bedfordshire.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Apologies to the good folks of Storrington, but I would argue under your rules, Mick, they're still Cockneys.
This is true. And you got the wrong river.
So if it's not the Waveney, oh no, the Waveney goes through, does that go through Norwich instead then? I'm trying to think.
Bewer.
The River Bewer, that's right. Yes, it comes out the big...
it comes out at Yarmouth, yes.
Yeah, the big, there's the big sort of fen and stuff behind it.
FC Barese, a sort of ode to Franco Barese, because I can't say I'm familiar with them.
No, that's right.
It's a name I don't know. And coming from Essex, it could be anything.
When you said it was from Essex, I was quite curious to see where they were going to be from. I wouldn't have guessed Essex.
No, I did wonder to start with whether if I hadn't have heard of them, I assume Mick had probably slipped somebody from Sardinia or Corsica in just to confuse me.
Oh, cruel. You are cruel. Finally, as the FA absolutely stick to their guns that the season must finish as scheduled, despite the fact that, you know, it's been raining since October and has never really stopped. Colne in the North West Counties League must play 10 times now before the 20th, or including the 20th of April. And that works out as Saturday, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. Plus, they've got Charnock Richard, who themselves have got 10 games still to play, to be allocated from a game that was called off earlier this week. I just think, David, it's all right the FA digging their heels in and saying the season must finish when we say the season is finished. Haven't they got some responsibility for the players' well-being in this? Because asking teams to play 10 times in what is effectively, 14 days or something, 16 days, it's bordering on ridiculous.
It is. You've got player welfare to consider. Now, we're hearing that games have been sometimes postponed because the referee's looked and there's a bit of water in one corner or it's slippery and he's worried the player's going to get injured. Lads that are working 5 days a week and are playing four times during that week, there's going to be a lot of injuries. And where's the integrity of the league that probably you can get Monday off work to go and play? You'll get Wednesday night off, but I don't think your boss is going to give you Thursday off, certainly not Friday. So the teams are going to get weaker as the week goes on, I would have thought as well. And does the league really need to finish? Do all those results really need to be in? Can they not extend everything by a couple of weeks? I can't believe that they can't do it.
I can't. Maybe these step six playoffs are not taking place until the end of the month. So another week. And I just cannot see what the problem is. I really can't. And yeah, I mean, the FA deserve pelters on this one because they've just completely washed their hands on it and said, oh, it's got to finish when we say it's got to finish. This winter is unprecedented. It will hear more next week. I'm sure we will. But in Devon and Cornwall, they so far this winter, they've had 300% more than their average rainfall. The water table is that high. It takes a shower and there's water standing on the pitch. And yes, I know in this day and age, referees are absolutely scared stiff of playing it and something happening and they're going to be held responsible because that's why these are being called off. Whereas in Davey's day, it was, well, get on with it.
Yeah. But,
everything changes. I'm sorry, I don't like the FA. I always moan about the FA, but this time, I think they are totally out of order. They really, really are. And that should have been it for the show, but it's not because I want to go back to Spain because is everybody's favourite club in Spain either Real Madrid or Barcelona, or probably more to the point, Matt, is everybody's second favourite club, Real Madrid and Barcelona? Because everybody in the UK seems fascinated by those two clubs. I mean, me, I look for Real Madrid's results because I don't know why, but you do. They're that big a club, aren't they? Or clubs.
Well, I grew up actually being obsessed with Ronaldo. I was in the original Ronaldo, especially when he was at Barcelona for that one season. So I always had Barcelona shirts as a kid. I've had to hide those photos now. because
I bet you have. Yeah.
Well, it was actually, there was a more unfortunate photo of me with a Betis scarf in Betis's stadium, and Malaga really don't like the Seville club, so I had to shred those photos very quickly. Some Malaga fans did find them, and luckily they were seen. They were used in jest and in jest rather than with aggression. I suppose the best way to sum it up is, I can't remember if it was for the league or the cup last year, but in Malaga city centre, they covered up the fountain to make sure Real Madrid fans wouldn't celebrate in the fountain, because there's so many Real Madrid fans in Malaga, which is sad because it's got this, you know, great football club on its doorstep. Yeah, if I'm a teacher, all the kids I teach, they all support Real Madrid or Barcelona. They like think I'm mad that I go to watch Malaga. And I would say, like you said, even Malaga fans, like when I've been on the bus back from away days, they'll say, can you put a radio on so you can listen to the Real Madrid game? And they'll cheer a Real Madrid goal. I'm not all of them. There is a bit of a sort of, oh, you can't support them. You can only support Malaga, which is how it should be. Yes, they're huge though. It's like the press here, like if you buy a newspaper here, even like a sports newspaper, the first, I'd say at least 10 pages, if not 15 pages, will be dedicated to those two clubs. The news is just those two clubs. Atleti are quite big as well, I'd say. But yeah, those two are ginormous entities.
They do seem to be. And that is our international special for tonight. David.
Matt, it's been a real pleasure tonight. Thank you so much for responding to the photograph thing a few weeks ago and then accepting the offer to come on here.
You see, that serves you right for responding, don't it?
Yeah.
We should probably say that photo was of the amazing stadium in Poprad with the Tatra Mountains in the background and the lake. So if you are in Slovakia, go check out Poprad. Yeah.
There were some really good photos, as we have with all of them that come in, but that one just stuck with me. It looked really, really good. Plus the fact the name was unpronounceable as well.
No, it's just Poprad. It's probably the easiest
one. All right, fair enough.
That's unpronounceable for a Cockney.
where can we find your podcasts and your social media stuff? And I'll link these in tomorrow anyway when the podcast goes out.
Okay, so on Twitter or X, if you want to call it that, I am at Matt Lost Boyo. I'm the same on Instagram. So if you do like photos of Spanish third division grounds, that's where I put most of my photos. There's also the Geary Cast, which is the Malaga fan podcast. We're trying to do two episodes a week now, like a review and a preview. It's quite a fun podcast. I think it's not, I don't think you have to be a Malaga fan to get it. And yeah, we haven't really mentioned it, but I do a podcast with my brother called Platini Played for Kuwait, which is, we pick a different like topic each episode. So for example, we did one about Welsh footballers abroad, and we pick three things we find interesting about that topic, whether it's a goal, a player, whatever. We've done episodes on Sven's Lazio. We've done an episode on overhead kicks. We did one recently just on diving headers. It really is just, what do you want to talk about this week? And
I've heard a couple of these. They make some of the stuff you hear with Andy Goldstein on an afternoon on Talk Sport. These are really funny. Some of the stuff you're coming out with, it's, I don't think you need to be a football fan to get it though. I think it's a different look at the game, isn't it?
Yeah. We're just, me and my brother are both big football geeks really. And it was just an excuse for us to talk about football in a geeky way. He's 7 years older than me, so he's probably played a big part in getting me up to date with the game. he'd be a fun guest if he wanted to do Asian football, because my brother's lived in South Korea, Vietnam, Malaysia, Kuwait. He's back in Southampton now.
Might take him up on that. The only thing is that Mick will love me struggling through particularly the Korean names.
Yes, we need to go for this one. You get that one organised, you two.
He's done a lot of ground hopping in Asia. He's definitely
brilliant. Thank you so much. Really enjoyed it. It's been great to have you on. And good luck to Malaga for the rest of the season. And who knows, maybe you'll be in Segunda B next season.
Segunda.
We're in Segunda.
Yes.
Right. So from the wonderful Matt over there in Spain, from the grey-haired Geary, is it Geary? Geary? Geary?
Geary.
Geary, the grey-haired Geary somewhere the other side of Balderton. And little old me, we'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.
Good night.